Today, the final installments in our series on corrections in Iowa. This hour, we'll focus on prison programs. Then later, at noon on River to River, it's life after prison. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. The vast majority of people who go to prison will get out. And for those inmates, the Department of Corrections has a very clear goal in mind.
What do we need to do to get the women back out successfully and not return to prison? And that's what we work on.
I'll talk about prison programs with the people who design and run those programs in the Department of Corrections, and I'll also talk with people who have benefited from those programs. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. This summer on Talk of Iowa and River to River, we've been exploring different aspects of corrections in the state. Today at noon, we'll wrap up the series with a conversation about life after prison. But this hour, we're going to focus on the opportunities that offenders have while they're actually in prison. Treatment and therapy, educational programs, leisure programs, and other opportunities for enrichment. Later in the hour, I'll talk with Patty Walkendorf, warden of the Iowa Correctional Institution for Women at Mitchellville, and Jerry Bartruff, deputy director of offender services at the Iowa Department of Corrections. My first guest today is Tom Criswell. He was recently released from prison after spending 4.5 years at the Newton Correctional Facility for a drug-related offense. Hello, Tom.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today.
I appreciate it. It's an honor and a pleasure.
When you entered prison, what was your mindset about the time that you'd be spending there?
That's what really was the start of the change in my mindset for me, is when I went in there, I had no indication of really when I was going to be released. I was under a 30-year term with a mandatory one-third, and had gotten to the point where I decided, well, this has happened often enough. It's not the world that's doing this to me. It's part of what I was doing to myself, and to see what I could do to make some changes in that worldview.
So when you went into prison and you started to have this idea of, I need to change, did you seek out opportunities to get help with that?
Yeah, I did. And I was lucky enough to be at Newton at that time. And there was a program called IFI. It's Interfaith Freedom Initiative. It happened to be a faith-based program. And it was set apart from the regular prison community and demanded discipline and behaviors that aren't common in the prison population. And demanded some discipline from me that helped me get the impetus to make the changes I needed to make.
Can you describe what some of the things that you did in that program that helped you?
In IFI, we had classes daily, so our day was very regimented and scheduled. So it demanded some being responsible for our time. We had projects and courses that we had to complete assignments in. We had to model behavior for the other inmates in IFI and the prison population in general that was positive and proactive.
Can you give me some specific examples of some of the things that you learned?
Some of the things I learned, again, was to discipline myself. When I reach out to others to help them, because IFI was big on mentoring. So once you were through the initial phases of IFI, if you exemplified behavior that they thought was standing out, they would ask you to mentor new people coming in. And just the reaching out to others and giving of yourself to others in spite of your own, what you thought your own circumstances were, is what kind of helped make the change for me.
Did it change how you thought about yourself?
Yeah, it did. A lot of the people in prison, and me myself included when I went in, was that the world's doing this to me, and if only it hadn't been for that one time or something like that, I'm part of this problem, if not the major part of it, and what can I do to change my own behaviors to make life easier?
Did you're talking about thinking of yourself kind of in a negative light and taking responsibility for the mistakes that you've made. But I wonder, as you started to have success in the program, in the Interfaith Freedom Initiative, did you start to see some of your strengths as well?
Yeah, I did. I found out that I had quite an aptitude for learning. I do a lot of reading. The change in just little things every day would come up with great results. People think that they, you know, have to do this big mold over or change over, but if you just pick out a few things at a time, get those mastered, and then pick a few other things, make it, you know, take the small bite approach to things, that the results you get over when you look back is pretty amazing.
You say that you started to realize that you had an aptitude for learning. Are you smarter than you ever thought you were before?
Yeah, and I make more practical and productive use of the learning I had. I've always been considered, I guess, above average, but using that in a positive manner and where it's a benefit to others in my community is what's really enriching about it.
You also had an opportunity when you were in prison to work with retired thoroughbred racehorses. Tell me about that program.
That was a continuation of my going through prison process, is that I was shortly after the IFI program closed and I stopped teaching there and going to classes there. I was transferred down to the minimum security camp at Newton, and they happened to have a program that was retraining retired racehorses, and you had to be committed to taking care of, feeding, grooming, exercising, doing the physical care of several horses at once. It was one of the more trusted positions there, because to ride the horses, you had to go out around the perimeter of the prison grounds and stuff like that. So I wasn't, at that time, I thought, eligible for working off-site, and so I chose that, and it helped, again, make myself committed to something outside of myself.
How did interacting with those animals change you?
Well, it helped create patience. some of the racehorses are fairly frisky, and they are very eccentric in some ways, and so just responding in a way that wasn't abusive and that was would calm them down. The learning to ride and doing something that was outside of my comfort zone and experiencing some success with it was very beneficial.
You were released after 4.5 years, so that's significantly earlier than you thought you could be released.
Correct.
Why do you think you were able to get out so quickly?
I guess I don't know if I can answer that myself. I just did things that I thought would benefit me later on, and I think they probably, through the eyes of the supervisors that were involved with my case as I was going through prison, just gave me a track record that they thought I could be trusted in the community.
What is your life like now?
Very good. I've been out since 2008. I've been with the same job. I'm a salesperson at Slumberland Furniture, which is also a benefit of that, because technically I'm not supposed to be able to have that job considering my past. And so it was a real bit of grace that I was offered the job and to continue in it 5 years later and be very happy with it. My life outside of work and stuff like that is I do volunteer work to try to help and enrich my community and to help pay back some of the debt that I still consider I owe to the community.
What kind of volunteer work do you do?
I'm involved in a program called Reentry Aftercare. I'm doing some mentoring and helping returning offenders coming back into the community get the access to the things that they need, jobs, housing, shelter, services, things like that that can help them be successful. I'm also involved in a project called Restored to Vote that helps offenders that have discharged their sentences regain their right to vote and the importance of doing that.
When you look back on who you were when you went into prison and who you are today, and you think about the time you spent in prison, how do you feel about those opportunities?
It's quite a turnaround. Going into prison and throughout most of my younger life, I had some things happen to me in my past that I just kind of thought the world owed me and that I was going to get mine and that kind of thing. It's changed things around to where the more I give, the more I get back, instead of just trying to take things and react out of a negative mindset.
Are you grateful for the time you had in prison?
In a sense, yeah. If I hadn't been to prison, I wouldn't be the person I am now. And the events that the course of my path through prison is what helped create me the person I am today. So in a very real sense, it could have saved my life.
Tom, thank you so much for talking with me today.
You're welcome.
Tom Criswell, he was released from prison after spending 4.5 years at the Newton Correctional Facility for a drug-related offense. And I want to bring Jerry Bartruff into the conversation now. He is Deputy Director of Offender Services at the Iowa Department of Corrections. Hello, Jerry.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on.
Well, thank you for being here today. And one of the things in listening to Tom describe some of the programs that he went through, and we'll get a broader picture from you and Patty Wachendorf in just a moment of the programs available to prisoners in Iowa, but he mentioned two of the programs that he went through are no longer available. How much turnover, how much change is there in programs within the Department of Corrections?
There is naturally turnover over time. And IFI was a unique program. And with the emphasis on faith-based, there were some issues that came along with that as far as conflict with the some constitutional kind of thing. So unfortunately, that program went away. But some of the things that Tom talked about, I think, are still important parts of our programming today, that we recognize that when people first come in, it's the world that caused my problem. It wasn't me. To help people recognize that they have some responsibility for what they did and what they do, that they need to make a change, and that then we design some programs that help people who have moved through that pre-contemplation to contemplation to determination kind of phase, that I need some help and I want some help, and what can I do to improve myself, and how can I have more self-discipline, as Tom mentioned, and how can I give back to others, and how can I use my strengths to help me overcome the situation I'm in. So when I return to the community, I am an asset to that community and I don't come back to prison again.
Well, we're going to take a short break and then we will get back to our conversation. We'll dig in depth into the programs that are available in Iowa prisons. I'm talking now with Jerry Bartruff, Deputy Director of Offender Services at Iowa Department of Corrections. Later in the program, in fact, in just a couple of minutes, I'll talk with Patty Wachendorf, Warden of the Iowa Correctional Institution for Women at Mitchellville. And we'll also hear from some people who are in prison right now. We'll hear some moments from visits that both Ben Kiefer, host of River to River, and I made to Iowa prisons over the last couple of months. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about prison programs, opportunities that offenders have while they're behind bars in Iowa's correctional system. We'll talk about therapy and treatment, education and enrichment programs. Jerry Bartruff is here. He is Deputy Director of Offender Services at the Iowa Department of Corrections. And Patty Wachendorf is also here. She is Warden at the Iowa Correctional Institution for Women at Mitchellville. Hello, Patty.
Hi, thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show. And I was just asking Jerry about turnover in programs, but Patty, maybe you can give us some insight just from your work in Mitchellville about how much things have changed over the past 15 years or so in Iowa's prisons and in the kinds of programs that you're allowed to give prisoners the opportunity to participate in.
There's been a lot of changes in the last 15 years, a lot of good changes. We're lucky in the department that we understand now, and I don't want to insult your listeners, but women are different than men. And we have embraced that in the Department of Corrections. And when we offer program to the women, we acknowledge that women are different than men. And we have gender-responsive programs, which are aimed for the female offenders. We've gone in that direction more and more in the last few years, and we're seeing good results because of that. I think that's one of the reasons our recidivism rate has gone down. If you're going to treat the woman in prison, you really have to treat the whole package, and that's what we do at Mitchellville, and having great success.
Well, in recidivism, that's the number of people who are returning to prison after they leave prison. And what has the change in the rate been?
30% to about 25% for females.
So that is a significant change. Jerry, can you give me an idea of what the recidivism rate is overall?
Yeah, for all offenders that were released from prison in 2008, the recidivism rate was 30.8%, which is down steadily from when we've been keeping track of recidivism rates over the last several years.
And I understand that many of the therapy programs, the treatment programs that prisoners participate in Iowa's Department of Corrections, of course, are the result of science and observation and research and drawing on success in Iowa and elsewhere. But also, of course, there is a political element to the budget at the Department of Corrections, to theories about what should be going on in Iowa's prisons. Jerry, how much of an influence does, let's say, a new administration or a change in the Iowa legislature have over prison programs?
Well, I think you referred to what we would call in our business evidence-based practices, that we recognize that there is a body of literature that says if we do these things, we have the likelihood of decreasing recidivism and contributing to offender success. Evidence-based practice also tells us that we focus our resources on those most likely to reoffend. So to do that, we need to do a good idea or a good job of identifying what the risk level is of our offenders. What are those criminogenic needs that if we can address those and help them gain new ways of thinking and behaving, we can reduce the risk? And then how do we engage them in cognitive behavioral programs that help them change the way that they think, which will then ultimately change the way they behave? So even though that there are some challenges with funding, I think the research tells us that if we do those things that I just mentioned, that we can use the resources we are allocated as best we can and still have that positive impact on reducing recidivism and having people like Tom be the norm instead of the exception. Because it is our goal that offenders are successful, and offenders are successful, there's fewer victims. People become members of the community, law-abiding members of the community without correctional supervision. And if more and more people are successful, there's more and more people, there's fewer people to incarcerate, fewer people on supervision, and we can use those resources we are allocated to focus on those most likely to come back to the system again.
I want to focus on some of the therapy and treatment programs just briefly that you're able to offer in the different institutions around Iowa. And I think to start off that conversation, let's hear from a man named Thomas, who has been in prison at the Mount Pleasant Correctional Facility for 7 years. He was 18 when he went to prison. He's now 25, and he is now in a long-term treatment program. He is a sex offender.
In the 7 years I've been in prison, I can consider all but the last 18 months wasted. I didn't learn anything in 7 years. It's just, it becomes so monotonous I didn't even pay attention to time passing. But in the last 18 months, I've learned. I've become a better person, and I've actually developed things, and I wish I would have been able to do this sooner or through the whole time, because that 7 years, I've seen people come, I've seen people go, and then come back again, and they haven't changed at all. Even people I've done 5 years, I've seen them come back and do a two-year bit. They haven't changed at all. But I've seen people that have done this treatment and actually done it, not just faked it, and they have changed in the short amount of time compared to the 7 years. And honestly, I think the focus on sex offenders shouldn't be about how long we can keep them warehoused. It's how can we rehabilitate them? Because warehousing them just gives you time to stew on what's going in your head. The last 6 years or so, I've been completely detached from my past and my emotions because I couldn't feel comfortable attaching to my emotions or anything while in prison. It actually started making me a worse person because I've heard a lot of inmates say this, but prison is just criminal finishing school. That's all it is, unless you're willing to participate in rehabilitation.
Again, that was an inmate named Thomas in the Mount Pleasant Correctional Facility, and he is a sex offender. He's now involved in a long-term treatment program that he wasn't able to be involved in for the first several years of his time there, and we don't need to get into the details of why that might be. But he said some pretty provocative things, Jerry, about prison being training ground for becoming a better criminal, and there is a danger to that, isn't there?
Well, I think there is, and if you look at some of the literature and if you look at some of the behavior contributes to criminal behavior, if you're hanging out with people that are criminal, the likelihood of you behaving in criminal ways increase. So incarceration is that we take those people who can no longer be managed in our community and we send them into prison where that becomes their community. Unless the offender has done some of the things that Tom described, where he begins to recognize that it's me that caused this, that I've got a problem and I need some help. Those kind of things may lead to what the person you just talked to indicated, but I also think that even though we focus on treatment towards the end of our sentences, we're focusing more and more on what we call pre-treatment activities, where early on in an offender's sentence, no matter how much time that they will be serving, we begin to help them move along that stage of change to say, I've got a problem and I need some help. And education programming can contribute to that. There's other things an offender can do outside of the normal structured treatment programs that help them make that move. I also think a good example of what Tom said was he served 4.5 years on a 30-year sentence, and he's been on supervision in the community for a significant amount of time. It's our goal in the Department of Corrections to get people to the community so that they have a significant time to be under supervision in the community, less time in prison. And it's those people who move through the system to the community and have that supervision that become the success stories, as Tom has demonstrated for us.
And Patty, when we visited you in Mitchellville a couple of weeks ago, you gave us a tour of the facility. We saw a really heavy emphasis on treatment and therapy. When women come into Mitchellville, what kind of screening process do they go through to see what kinds of treatment and therapy might be beneficial to them?
We do all kinds of treatment, all kinds of assessments, substance abuse. We've recently added in the last couple of years head injury screening because so many of our women have been victims of domestic violence, so we screen for head injuries as well. We're really strength-based. One of the first questions we ask the women when they walk in is, what are you good at? And it's really sad when some of the women just sit there and look at you and they can't answer that question. So we really focus on building the woman up, looking at her strengths as opposed to her challenges that she needs to work on, although she knows what those are and what she wants to work on. Most of our women want to change. But, you know, if you come to prison and you like your lifestyle and you don't see a need to change, obviously they're not going to change. But most of our women want to do better. They want to take advantages of the resources that we offer and make the changes. And I think most of our women are successful because 75% don't return.
And how much choice goes into what kind of treatment programs an offender will participate in?
They have a choice. We teach them all the time about life is about choices they make and accountability for those choices. So they do have choices. They do have input. They know what they're required to do. Most of the time they agree. But they also know the reality is that if they need substance abuse treatment and they refuse to do substance abuse treatment, we will tell the parole board that they refuse to do substance abuse treatment. So there may be consequences for that. So the women are well aware what they need to do in order to work their way back out into society again.
So there is definitely choice, but there's also pressure.
Consequences. We teach about accountability and consequences. There's consequences for your life decision, and we want them to make better decisions in prison so they practice that when they're back out on the streets. So it is consequences and the results of that.
Are your programs changing? Are your therapy programs changing frequently or all the time based on the evidence for success that you see?
We make adjustments as we need to. We go where the evidence leads us to. If something's not successful, we've eliminated programs because the evidence didn't support that it was being successful. You know, we only have so much staff and so much space, so we want to maximize the staff and the space we have to only have the programs that are meaningful and make changes in the women's lives. So we're really focused on what works.
Let's hear from another inmate, and then I want to focus on educational opportunities when inmates are in prison. Some inmates choose to get their GED. Some actually choose to go on into secondary education and actually get a college degree. When I visited the Iowa Correctional Institution for Women in Mitchellville, I talked to Denise, who has earned a bachelor's degree during her time in prison. She's been in prison for 25 years so far, and I asked her why she chose to pursue her education.
I was trying to find something, you know, that I could focus on that would ground me. I'm not a TV watcher, so I thought, well, what better time to get my college education, because I didn't get to finish it in society. So in here we can't really major in any certain area and utilize it. So I thought I would just try to get the associate's degree through a friend that assisted me financially and through scholarships and grants. I was able to enroll in Kirkwood College, or no, it was University of Iowa first. And so I started independent study through the mail, one course per year, and then I started taking two courses per year. So it was a slow process, but I was consistent and very diligent about it. And then I earned the bachelor's degree, liberal arts of applied science. 16 years it took me to get the two degrees, 8 years apiece.
Do you feel proud?
Sure. Yeah.
Since you finished...
But I also know that I can't utilize it unless I, you know, my sentence gets lowered and I am able to get back into society.
You've been in here a long time. Are there things about prison life that you really enjoy?
No. I can say that nothing contents me here because I won't allow it to.
If you are able to re-enter society, is there anything that you've learned in here in particular that you really think would help you after
Absolutely.
You leave?
Absolutely. I know more about myself than I would have ever learned had I been in society. I know all my modes, my temperament, my likes, my dislikes, my interests, my what I'm capable of, what I'm not capable of. You know, I just know me to the fullest, where I don't think I would have ever had that opportunity in society, because you're so busy with your family and other people and your life. And, you know, in here, it's, you got to look out for you. So, yeah, absolutely. I know who I am. I know what direction I'm going in.
Denise, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
That was Denise, an inmate at the Correctional Institution for Women in Mitchellville. And Jerry, can you give me an idea of some of the educational opportunities that inmates have? I mean, Denise mentioned that she had support to pursue a bachelor's degree. That wasn't a taxpayer-funded education. But are there GED opportunities for inmates?
There are. And one of the things we recognize in corrections is that we need to collaborate with other state agencies. And correctional education is provided by staff from community colleges. We think that that's extremely important, so when offenders like Denise do return to the community, they understand the benefits that community colleges can offer. So our community college staff and all of our institutions teach ESL, English as a Second Language. For offenders who read under the sixth grade level, we have literacy classes to help them improve their reading level. We do offer GED, and I could tell you one of the things that I think any of us who work in corrections look forward to is GED graduation. When an offender does accomplish a GED, we have a graduation ceremony. They wear caps and gowns. Family are invited to come in. There's speeches that are given, and afterwards there's cake and punch. And for several of those offenders, as Denise said, that's one of the things that helps me learn about myself, and that I do have some things that are strengths, and I want to do more. Our community college staff also deliver what we call a life skills program that usually happens towards the end of a person's incarceration to help them prepare to return to the community. And during life skills, there are segments on resume writing, interview skills, financial management, parenting, and how do I become reinvolved with my family and other relationships, healthy lifestyles, responding to supervision, and those kind of things that we all need to be cognizant of when we're becoming more independent in the community. So our community colleges are a great asset for those kind of programs. We do recognize that a correctional education has a significant return on investment. One of the things that our community colleges also help us with is what we call vocational education. So offenders in several of our institutions have an opportunity to participate in community college credit courses for jobs that are currently in demand in the private sector that will hopefully teach them the skill and lead to employment. And vocational education is another one of those areas where we look at the investment. There is a significant return on investment for the dollars that we spend on vocational education.
All right, and we're going to talk a little bit more about vocational education in a moment. We'll even visit Prison Industries in Mitchellville as well. Right now I'm talking with Jerry Bartruff, Deputy Director of Offender Services at Iowa Department of Corrections, and Patty Walkendorf, Warden at the Iowa Correctional Institution for Women at Mitchellville. We'll continue this conversation in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about programs that are available to offenders in Iowa's prisons. There are a number of programs designed to help offenders develop job skills that they can use when they leave prison. When we visited the Iowa Correctional Institution for Women in Mitchellville, we had an opportunity to visit the Prison Industries building. It's a large warehouse teeming with activity. On the day we visited, there were 56 inmates hard at work. They were sewing jeans, silk screening T-shirts, embroidering messenger bags, sorting household chemicals, and even upholstering office furniture. Manager Justin Opfer gave us a tour. Where does the office furniture go? Who do you contract with for that?
The office furniture, there's a different vendors that we buy it from. We buy kits from. We put it together. And we also do some of the fabric on them. We'll cut and sew to make it on there. Some of the office furniture we actually, in another Iowa Prison Industries in either Anamosa or Fort Madison, may make the frames. They'll send them to us. We'll upholster them and do all that. So it's a good partnership. Like if somebody wants to order a chair, they may do the woodwork in Fort Madison. Once they're done with the woodwork, they'll ship it down here, and then we'll upholster it.
And again, are those just for state agencies, or who buys them?
It's mostly for state agencies. You have to be a nonprofit state agency. So we do a lot of work with churches, and prisons and schools are probably our biggest three customers.
That was sound from Prison Industries at Mitchellville at the Iowa Women's Correctional Institution there. And with me right now, Patty Walkendorf, Warden of the Iowa Correctional Institution for Women, and Jerry Bartruff, Deputy Director of Offender Services with the Iowa Department of Corrections. And Patty, that day there were 56 women working in Prison Industries in Mitchellville. How important is the employment, and there are other jobs in the prison as well, in the cafeteria and other places, how important is employment as a program for women who are in prison?
Well, it's critical. I mean, for the women to go out and be successful, they have to be able to find a job, and a good job, so they can support themselves and their kids. So we work well with Prison Industries. They teach, obviously, skills, upholstery skills, things like that, but they also teach soft skills. How to be on time, how to get along with your coworkers, you know, how do you fill out resumes, how do you interview? So we work with the women on those skills, and then Prison Industries actually helps them put the skills to work.
And how much do women get paid to do those jobs in Prison Industries?
Well, it's not as much as you'd get paid on the streets, but it is the best job, the best paying job in prison, and it's probably 50 to 75 cents an hour, roughly.
What are the consequences if they're not on time or if some of those soft skills don't get developed very quickly?
Well, we work on those soft skills, and just like everybody in the community, you don't always get it the first time. So we work with them, and most of the time they do want to improve. And if they don't want to improve, the ultimate consequence is they'll lose that job. And that's quite a blow for some of them that depend on prison wages.
How much of a privilege is it to be able to have a job in prison? Is that something you have to work up to?
Yes. Yeah. Most of the women want to work because, one, it fills up their time and makes the day go faster, and a lot of them depend on prison wages. If they want to buy, you know, a candy bar or a pair of personal tennis shoes, something like that, they have to do that with their own wages.
All right. And that's something that obviously if you're making 50 to 75 cents an hour, you have to save up quite a while to get a pair of shoes.
Yes, it does take a while.
And are these wages garnished for restitution as well?
They have to pay restitution. If they owe child support, they have to pay child support, court costs, things like that. Yes, they have to pay that out of those wages.
This hour, we're talking about prison programs, and you have an opportunity to join our conversation as well at 866-780-9100. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Is this something you have personal experience with? Is there, if you were in prison, is there a program in particular that helped you or maybe helped a loved one of yours who was in prison? I want to talk about wellness programs as well. And Ben Kiefer, host of River to River, recently visited the Iowa Medical and Classification Center in Oakdale, where he spoke with Russ Ort, correctional security manager, about their fitness program.
Yeah, we try we try to have as many activities as we can so that we can walk in here. And so they're playing some basketball. There's some pickleball. You can see that there's a variety of exercise machines, treadmills, stair steppers, ellipticals that the offenders can make use of. We also have a room with various weight stations, universal weight stations, that they can come down and use. And we just recently added 11 universal weight stations out on the prison yard. So we could have more and more inmates involved with some of that exercise.
Okay, so physical activity is encouraged from all.
Yeah, and actually, a lot of these guys they crave physical activity. They want to be active. It's good mentally and physically for them. And again, providing these programs keeps them entertained. It lets them feel they're doing something for themselves. It's part of the community. And overall, it adds greatly to the safety of the institution.
Again, that was Ben Kiefer visiting the Iowa Medical and Classification Center in Oakdale. And Patty, when I visited you in Mitchellville, we talked quite a lot about wellness programs that you've been working on in Mitchellville. Why is it such an important part of life in prison from your perspective?
You know, it really helps teach the women coping skills. Exercise is a great stress reducer. Part of the wellness program we have also teaches about good eating, nutrition. We have the DOC dietitian that comes in and talks to them. We teach about exercise. We have a meditation portion with it. You know, sometimes you abuse substances because you don't have coping skills, so we try and teach the women good coping skills, and a lot of times that's through exercise. We've had women reduce their medication because of being in this program, so it's really been helpful. And the women get into the exercise. You can go to work now early in the morning, and you see a dozen or so women out there running in the morning before they start their day. So that's really good. And then we hope they continue that once they get out to keep their stress and exercise under control. And we also hope they teach it to their kids and pass it on to the next generation, too.
And you mentioned running. That was something that women at Mitchellville and in other prisons really had never been allowed to do. Why was running forbidden? And how did you decide, you know, maybe this is okay?
I think it's one of those things, and I hate to admit this, but I will. It's one of those things that we've just never allowed because we've never allowed it. So when we really look at what's wrong with having the women run, you know, we really have a limited amount of space out there and quite a few women, so we have to be careful so they're not running into each other or anything. But we figured out a way to do it. And now staff is excited to see the women running. We encourage the women, which helps their self-esteem. And with women, a lack of self-esteem is one big reason that they come to prison. And that's all tied into childhood trauma and some of the ways that they grew up. So the wellness program, the running, the exercise, the coping mechanisms all helps the self-esteem, and that's part of that gender responsivity that we talked about earlier, when you treat the whole woman as a package so that she can work on those issues she needs to work on and not come back to prison.
And, Jerry, we heard Greg Ort talking about the program in Oakdale just a few minutes ago, and I'm sorry I had his information wrong. That was Greg Ort, deputy warden at Oakdale. And how common are these wellness programs? Is that something that you find at all of the different institutions?
We do find those at all of the institutions, and not only some of the benefits that that Patty pointed out, but if we look at some of the needs principles that I mentioned earlier, lack of pro-social leisure activities is one of those things that often contributes to criminal behavior. So finding opportunities for people to participate with others, to participate in things that promote wellness, that helps replace the idle time with productive time and actually is an important component of, even though it's one of the lesser four of the needs areas, it's one of those things that helps offenders make better use of their time and also to less engage in criminal type of thinking and behavior.
I want to talk about another program, Patty, that we had a chance to see in action when we were in Mitchellville, and that's a program where you actually have inmates who are pianists teaching piano lessons to other inmates. And let's just hear a moment from one of the inmates playing a piano.
I've been working on for just 3 weeks, and actually I memorized it. I didn't even look at the sheet.
That's good.
I just had it up there just in case I forgot a line.
How long have you been taking lessons?
A few months.
Are you playing that at the recital?
Yes.
All right, that was one of the inmates in Mitchellville playing on a piano. And Patty, how did this piano lesson program come into being?
Well, it started a few years ago. I was actually taking piano lessons, and for me to relax, I thought was pretty amazing. So when I play the piano, it's kind of relaxing, and it's a stress reliever. So I thought if it would work for me, it would work for the women. And I knew we had a few women there that were great piano players. So we approached them, asked them if they'd be interested in teaching other women, and they said yes. So it kind of grew from there. And in fact, yesterday we had a piano recital out at Mitchellville on a Sunday afternoon, and the women, the one that we just heard from there, played. So we had probably about six women play for their first time in a piano recital. You know, again, it's good for women's self-esteem. It's a stress reliever. It's a good use of their time. They really enjoy it. One of the women in the piano program yesterday had never taken piano lessons in her life. So she comes to prison and she's learning to play the piano.
And you stressed when we talked before, this is not at a taxpayer expense. This is something that you've been able to put together within the prison, using talent within the prison, volunteers within the prison. Why is it important? Why do you think that the women who are in this program are benefiting? What do you see that you think makes this valuable?
It's a sense of accomplishment for them. You should have seen them yesterday after they played their piece. And people were clapping for them, just like we did in your piece. It's self-esteem. It's accomplishment. It's a sense of purpose. It's a good use of their time. They can continue with piano lessons or just playing the piano if they want to on the streets. So it's a good use of their time.
We have a caller on the line. This is Mark from Des Moines. Hello, Mark.
Hello.
Hi. And you have some experience in your family, right?
I'm 74, and my youngest daughter is 42, I think.
And
I can tell you what the weather was like when she was born, but I can't remember how old she is. That's father's, you know.
Well, and she has been to prison twice. Tell me your frustration with what you feel are problems with that experience.
Well, this wellness thing, the about prick my ears up when I'm sitting here at the table. She has, if there has been a drug made, she has been on it. And she was first put in Mitchellville because she was taking drugs. The second time she was put in Mitchellville for manufacturing and selling meth. And when they're in there, they're off drugs. But there doesn't seem to be any good communication between the prison system and the, like Ireley Ball and Broadlands. Because now she is a junkie on prescription drugs that are being prescribed. There's a couple of them that she's on. It says right on the sheets from the drug manufacturer, do not give this to somebody that has experience with opiates. Guess what?
Okay, Mark, we're almost out of time. I want to give both Patty and Jerry an opportunity to respond to that. And, of course, Patty, no matter what you do in prison, that doesn't mean that you have control over what happens when offenders leave prison, but you do. You do work hard to continue to support the women that leave Mitchellville, right?
Yes, we do, and we try and make that cycle seamless when they leave the prison and get back out into the community. That's why we want them to leave on supervision. We do talk to the parole officer. They are aware of what they do, programs they participated in when they were on the streets. You know, and I'm sorry for what he's experienced with his daughter. Addiction is tough to beat. We give the women skills that they need, and the reality is they have to use those skills when they get back out.
Patty, I know that you were very generous with your time in inviting us to visit you in Mitchellville and showing us around and arranging for interviews that we did. It's clearly important to you to get the message out about what's going on behind bars in Mitchellville. What do you want people to know about the Department of Corrections in Iowa that we just don't seem to understand?
I want people to know what we do at Mitchellville, you know, that we make good use of the taxpayer dollars, that we try and make a difference in these women's lives. You know, for the people that want to change, they have the opportunity to make those changes in prison. We have great staff that's dedicated to help them make those changes, but the reality is they have to do the hard work. I tell the women all the time, we can't work harder than they do. They're the ones that have to do the hard work and dig down deep and make the changes that they need to make. And then it's even harder when they get back out into the community and have to make those changes. The father was right. There's no drugs in prison. But when they get back out again, all those temptations are there. So we give them the skills that they need so they can go out and make those changes that they need to make. And I want the taxpayers to know that they get good, we make good use of their taxpayer dollars. You know, I'm a taxpayer too, and I don't like to waste money. So we really put the right person in the right program at the right time to make the best use of our resources. And when they get back out, we follow up with support. We don't just get them out and then forget about them. Many of our women call back to staff and let us know how they're doing. They are successful, and they're proud of that, and they want us to know that. So, again, 75% of our women don't come back, and I don't think you see that in the media a lot. So we need to do a better job educating the public like we are today about what really happens in the prison system.
Patty Wackendorf, thank you so much.
Thank you for having us today.
Patty Wackendorf, warden at the Iowa Correctional Institution for Women at Mitchellville. Jerry Bartroff, thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for having us.
Jerry Bartroff, Deputy Director of Offender Services at the Iowa Department of Corrections. Talk of Iowa is produced by Emily Woodbury, Dennis Reese, Sarah Bowden, and Ben Stanton. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins, with technical support today from John Pemble. And this was our final installment on Talk of Iowa in our corrections series. And the final installment in the series is coming up today at noon on River to River with Ben Kiefer. What's the plan, Ben?
Hi, Charity. Very quickly, we'll pick up on one of the themes you had during your hour. We'll talk about recidivism and examine why offenders from rural areas may be at a disadvantage when they leave prison, and what factors influence an offender's likelihood to return to prison, Charity.
So life after prison today at noon.
And you have yourself a great next week of vacation, Charity.
Thank you very much, Ben. This is Talk of Iowa.